You're listening to The Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network, available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com. I'm Naomi Fowler, and each month I'll be bringing you news and analysis of a subject our politicians don't want to talk about. Tax havens, the secrets of the shadow banking system, and financial abuses that have brought the world economy to its knees. I'll show you what's really going on, how we're paying for it, and what we can do about it. But first, the TaxCast news headlines for this month. Apple's sitting on a pile of cash. They've got about $54 billion offshore, and they've paid almost no tax on that to any government in the world. For the moment, that money's going to stay offshore because they don't want to pay corporation tax on it. Apple avoids paying billions of dollars in taxes every year. As if that wasn't enough, now they want a tax holiday so they can bring some of their offshore money into the US. Bob McIntyre of Citizens for Tax Justice.
So far, they've avoided paying $17 billion in taxes that they otherwise would have had to pay had they not engaged in these tax shenanigans. If the United States didn't have these rules that allowed them to move profits offshore, they would have already paid the taxes on it. They're saying that because of their tax avoidance techniques, that they're being victimized by the government. Quite the contrary. Apple is victimizing the United States government and its citizens by not paying its fair share in taxes.
A £10 million luxury house in London has been reclaimed for the Libyan people in their first successful asset recovery case. London's High Court ruled the house is rightfully the property of the Libyan state because Gaddafi's son Saadi bought it with diverted state funds. Billions of dollars have been frozen in Western banks since the Arab Spring revolutions. Little of it's been returned except for a couple of jet planes from Tunisian dictator Ben Ali. Libyan, Tunisian and Egyptian rulers and their families took full advantage of tax havens, often using front companies. Robert Palmer of Global Witness says that was the case with this house.
It was technically owned by a front company in the British Virgin Islands called Capitana Seas Limited. It shows how easy it is if you're a corrupt politician to bring your assets into the West. I think if you took most houses in London over £5 million, they would be owned by an offshore company. This is a way of guaranteeing anonymity, potentially a way of avoiding taxes. There's a whole regime out there of anti-money laundering laws which are designed to prevent this sort of behaviour happening. And what we see is they're simply not being implemented or enforced properly.
We'll have more on how easy it is to set up anonymous companies and hide your assets later. In the UK government's budget this month, much of the focus has been on tax cuts for the wealthy. But less well-known are corporate tax cuts and reform that means developing countries may lose £4 billion a year in lost taxes. British citizens will lose £1 billion a year, according to the Treasury's own estimates. Campaigners say it's much more than that, all because they're watering down the UK's anti-tax haven rules. In the past, if a British company shifted its profits from countries like Zambia to Switzerland with a much lower tax rate, the UK taxed them on the difference. That meant it'd cost them more or less the same as if they'd just paid their dues in Zambia. So a disincentive to use tax havens. But the new rules mean offshore profits won't be subject to this top-up tax rate. ActionAid's Martin Hearson says neither richer nor poorer countries can afford the loss in tax revenue.
Well, the government is committed to making Britain the most competitive tax system in the G20. That's its stated objective. Now, of course, you become the most competitive tax system for a while until somebody else manages to get in there and beat you at it. So this is all part of an international bit of tax competition. It's crazy to be, on the one hand, investing money in helping developing countries raise more tax revenue, which government's doing through its development assistance, and on the other hand, changing your tax policy in a way which will cost them more than they'll raise through that support you've given them.
And those are the Tax Justice headlines for this month. Now we're going to speak to John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network for his take on this month's Tax Justice news. Okay, so this month we've seen a big victory for the Libyan people, a £10 million house being returned to them. What are the legal obligations of banks when a despot or a dictator's son approaches them wishing to dispose of billions of dollars?
Well, under the existing anti-money laundering regime, banks have a particular duty to apply what are called enhanced due diligence, because they're dealing with what in the jargon is called politically exposed persons, kleptocrats, oligarchs from all over the world. The general view is, well, as long as they haven't been completely ticked off the guest list at the United Nations, they'll pass. And so the money laundering regime requirements simply weren't being applied as strictly as they should have been.
It seems that Saadi Gaddafi was so confident the bank involved couldn't possibly say that they didn't know who he was.
I think it was quite clear that they knew who was involved. This regime had for decades been simply stealing money from the Libyan people and diverting it to their own use. Certainly it should have triggered off suspicious transaction reports, because there was every reason to believe that Saadi, on his salary, would not have been able to afford a house of this type. Everyone down the chain, whether it was the banks or the lawyers or the estate agents, will have been aware or should have been aware that this was not money gained in a legitimate way, and therefore they should not have been handling it. This was a massive exercise in money laundering, but everyone turned a blind eye to it.
Could or should charges be brought against estate agents, banks, the people involved in the purchase of this particular £10 million house?
I think it would be very difficult in this case because of the government's position. The UK government has been far too accommodating towards the past Libyan regime. There's a desperate need now to apply the money laundering regime very much more comprehensively, applying due diligence processes much more coherently.
All right, Ben, moving on. The Organisation of Economic Cooperation and Development says in its mission statement, the mission of the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development is to promote policies that will improve the economic and social well-being of people around the world. Sounds very nice. They've said this month that the use of tax havens is in decline, and thanks to anti-tax evasion measures, they've pulled in around $14 billion in taxes. So, fantastic. Good news.
This is the club of the rich countries, promoting rich countries' interests around the world. It is a tool which has been used by 34 country members to extend their power and their position into policymaking around the world, where they for decades have been trying to shape an international tax regime totally to meet the interests of the rich world, including the rich world's tax havens. Now, as to the claims about the $14 billion that has been raised as a result of their initiative, in fact, there are no statistics that the OECD have been able to produce to show they've actually achieved any reduction in the volume of tax evasion.
If you're a poorer nation that doesn't belong to the OECD, what do you do about trying to enable yourself and your fellow developing countries to raise more taxes with things like international companies?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the interests of the poorer countries are, in some respects, very opposed to the interests of the OECD countries, because the OECD countries include some of the world's most powerful tax havens: Switzerland, Austria, Luxembourg, Netherlands, Ireland, United Kingdom, United States are all used as tax havens extensively, and they're the countries which host very large numbers of multinational companies and transnational companies. Their interests lie in maintaining a situation where multinational and transnational companies are largely taxed where they're resident and are able to use tax havens very, very extensively. The interests of poorer countries are to tax multinational companies and transnational companies at source, in other words, where their profits are created. And the OECD has been blocking that for decades.
And I believe that some of the strong emerging economies like India and Brazil and China have ideas of their own that are quite different from the OECD.
This is a gigantic power struggle, but the OECD is bit by bit losing out, and quite rightly so. Brazil is already applying standards which are quite significantly different from the OECD standard, which doesn't work in practice. India and China are saying, we no longer wish to have the OECD standard as the international standard. We now want to have a standard that meets the needs of other countries. And I think this is a very welcome move.
So watch this space. There's some big changes afoot in the tax struggle globally.
This is enormous. This is a power struggle over how the proceeds of globalisation are shared between developed and developing countries.
Thanks, John. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. And now for this month's feature. It doesn't matter who you are or where you are in the world, you can avoid paying your taxes. And the UK and the US are your easiest way into tax haven paradise. On the TaxCast this month, the ABCs of setting up letterbox companies, anonymously. Now, my little nephew's got some big business plans.
A, B, C, D, L, M, L, A, P.
Okay, so he hasn't quite got his ABCs yet, but good news. Setting up his own company anonymously with an offshore bank account is child's play.
First thing to do, simply go to your favourite search engine and type in that you want to form a UK company.
I'm with Richard Murphy in central London, but we could just as well be in Timbuktu.
So having done that, I can immediately get hordes of companies who will offer me this service of incorporating my company for me. And if I just scroll down the page a little bit, £32 to form a private limited company using his own choice of name.
Okay, I think my nephew can put the money up for that. So I think we will have Raphael Enterprises.
Well, Raphael Enterprises has to have its own registered office here, which obviously means that Mum and Dad might agree to share their address, and he's got to...
Well, actually, I think that he would like to do it secretly. He doesn't really want Mum and Dad to know about his
business activities. Oh, wow. Now, wants to do this in secret for Mum and Dad. A little discretion is available. This is going to cost Raphael more. £557.
Well, you've got to speculate in order to accumulate.
Indeed. Here we have a company that's saying that they will provide him with a nice address in central London where he can receive his post. He will have his registered office. Secrecy guaranteed. We don't know where he's really trading anymore. They're offering a lot more secrecy than that, though, for our £557. We can have a nominee director. So one of their staff will lend their name to be the director of this company. Raphael doesn't want to admit to even owning this company. We can have nominee shareholders. Nothing on public record now associates Raphael with the company he owns.
The only thing about the UK is that he really doesn't want to pay much tax on his profits. So what can Raphael do about that?
Well, it sounds like Raphael is a born criminal to me, because a UK company must pay tax on its worldwide profits, in which case... He could have a bank account, and he's being offered it here in various interesting locations. Panama, Gibraltar, Belize, Lithuania. St. Nevis is on the list of options. One of the places that it is hardest to crack in the world, where basically there is no information exchange, there's no regulation which is effective either.
So Raphael can have all his profits, and he can play with all his money as much as he likes, and it'll all be in the company name, which won't be traceable to him personally, which is good, because if his mum and dad knew, he might get into trouble.
Yes. If Raphael had the best Lego collection on earth, and Mum began to suspect this wasn't coming out of his pocket money and decided to report him, how would the police identify what Raphael was doing? Because after all, there's no company which links him to it, because he's used nominees everywhere. The only way we could get that link between Raphael, the company, the offshore bank account, and the money he's hidden in Panama is because he's been careless about how he manages it on his computer in most cases.
Good thing he manages his affairs on the computer at his nursery school. And there's more good news for Raphael. The British government doesn't think setting up companies anonymously is a problem, so they're not going to legislate for transparency. And even better, if he waits long enough and never files any tax returns, the registrar of companies may strike him off.
That doesn't mean that the bank account suddenly ceases to exist. It's just now completely hidden from view, owned by a company that legally doesn't exist. Now that's truly the deep shadow economy, because they are legal non-people. They don't exist. They're officially dead.
So, long live Raphael Enterprises. No need to prove who the owner is. No need to prove who owns the offshore bank account. So take it away, Raphael.
Now I know my ABC. Won't you come and sing with me?
You've been listening to the TaxCast. We'll bring you more news and analysis next month.